irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. And a special thank you to our sponsors at Markham Search. Markham Search LLC offers premier professional recruiting services around the country. Today, we have with us on the show Pamela Samuels Young. Pamela is an attorney and award-winning author and writes mysteries that matter. Her fast-paced legal thrillers tackle social issues such as sex trafficking, gender discrimination, and sexual harassment. Her most recent courtroom drama, Abuse of Discretion, examines a shocking teen sexting case, Anybody's Daughter, which won the NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Fiction, provides an eye-opening look into the world of child sex trafficking. Pamela also writes erotic romance under the pen name Sassy Sinclair. A former journalist, she's received a bachelor's degree from USC and also earned graduate degrees from Northwestern University and UC Berkeley School of Law. The Compton, California native is a frequent speaker on the topics of child sex trafficking, fiction writing, and pursuing your passion. Thank you so much for joining us today, Pamela.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Or should I say counsel? Remind me not to defend your bad side. Attorney turned writer. So tell us a little bit about this. I mean, I know you and I talked a little bit before the show last week about how you had always had this passion, and then all of a sudden something happened and you knew that there was a part of you that wasn't being fulfilled. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that and how that came to be for you?
Sure. I mean, I started out my career as a television news writer and went to law school in my 30s and enjoyed that career. But it was a really much more stressful than being in a TV newsroom, believe it or not. And my release, both were stressful. I chose stressful careers, but they were both fun. But I read legal thrillers as my way of release and just for fun. And, you know, I love John Grisham and Sheldon Siegel and others. But I never saw in the John Grisham books, particularly, women attorneys. One morning, after, you know, a few years of closing his books and joining them, but saying, where were the women or where were the even the African-American characters? I decided that I was going to take a case that I had worked on and turn it into a legal thriller. And I remember getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning because I was at a large corporate law firm, O'Melveny & Myers, and started to sit down to the computer and try to craft the story. And without question, I discovered my passion. Because from there on, nothing else but passion could explain, you know, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and writing in airports and on airplanes and weekends whenever I could find the time. And here I am today, more than 10 novels to my credit. And finally, I'm a retired attorney, just 2 years out, and a full-time author.
That is amazing. Now, so when you were a child, what did you think you wanted to be when you grew up?
You know, I thought I was going to be like a newspaper reporter. That was actually, I was a, you know, editor of a high school newspaper, all those kind of things. And when I went to USC, I majored in journalism. And I had an internship planned at the Washington office of the LA Times. I had an internship and it fell through and they sent me to the ABC station in Washington, D.C., WJLA. And that, from then on, it was TV. I never looked back. And I really did enjoy my TV career. And, you know, it was a, you know, working as a lawyer and being a TV news writer was a perfect combination of skills to be a novelist. I write fast because of the TV news experience, and I have great stories from my legal experience.
So were there ever times where I know so many people who aspire to be writers, whether it's screenwriters or novelists, and yet they get rejected? A dear friend of mine has written probably 3 books and had, you know, one agent after another say, ooh, this is missing or that is missing or something is not quite right with a screenplay. Did you have immediate success when you started writing?
I wish. No, I did not. And when I sat down to write that first book, it took me 3 years to finish it. And I was convinced that as soon as I mailed it off, Oprah would be calling me and I'd be writing the rest of my books from my beach house. That didn't happen. it was rejected by several agents. And somewhere along that line, I read an article that said John Grisham got 45 rejection letters and people told him nobody wanted to read about lawyers. And it was his second book that got picked up, not his first one. So I continued writing. I started a second book, and it was that second book that eventually got me an agent. And I realized now, because I was that first book I wrote, I would hand it out to everybody I worked with. And, you know, I was just so proud of that book. And it's like, I still have the manuscript. It so sucks. I had no idea how to plot a story. I had no idea what I was doing. You don't know what you don't know. And a couple things that got me to where I needed to be. I took a 1-day writing course through the UCLA Writers Program. And the guy who later became my writing coach, his name is Michael Levin. He's a ghostwriter. He's written probably, 50 books. And he said, take a book that's like yours and outline it. That had never crossed my mind. And I outlined John Grisham's The Firm. And it was like I had a light bulb moment for me because I understood the plotting from then on. Because I think everybody tries to write a book. Everybody can write a grammatically correct sentence. I mean, come on. I mean, most people. But it's how you plot a story that makes a difference, how you build your characters. And by him telling me to take the book apart, that got me over. And the second thing was somebody at work gave me a copy of my first James Patterson book, Roses Are Red. I'm not a particularly fast reader. I read it in 1 day. And I was like, why did I read this book in 1 day? I took that apart. Chapters were short. He hooked you at the beginning of the chapter. He hooked you at the end of the chapter. And I took those concepts and I translated them to my writing. And from then on out, things began to pick up for me.
That's amazing.
And I eventually got that first book deal. Yeah.
So you said it wasn't the first manuscript that you wrote that wound up being the one that got you the deal. It was the second one, if I heard you correctly?
It was the second one. As a matter of fact, I got a 2-book deal from BET Books. It was then BET Books, which was later bought by Harlequin. And I actually rewrote that first book, and that was the second book. My first book was Every Reasonable Doubt, and the second one was In Firm Pursuit. Even though In Firm Pursuit was written first, it was published second.
You know, it's funny you say that because we've all heard so many stories throughout history of people who have tried and failed and tried and failed. And I think that people assume, mistakenly so, that just because you have a passion and you give it a shot, that you're going to be successful right off the bat. And I'll never forget, for as long as I live, I was sitting in Marina Del Rey at a little cafe right over there by the Venice Pier, and there was a gentleman named Duncan who was an artist in town from, I believe it was Australia. And by gosh, Duncan took out a copy of his business card that had his first painting he ever sold, and he unequivocally, he knew his value. He said, I am going to be the man to sell a painting while alive for the most amount of money that anybody has ever seen while an artist is alive, because often it's post-mortem that somebody makes money. And I looked at his card because the picture of it was on there. And no offense, Duncan, if you ever hear this show, not my style of art, not my taste, but the man heard 10,000 people say, nope, not going to pay, you're out of your mind. And the 10,000th person picked up his painting, bought it, paid what he wanted for it, and he is now, I think you could probably Google him, the best paid artist who ever sold a painting.
Oh my God. Now that's a story about perseverance. That's a story about perseverance. Oh my God. I will look him up.
Yeah, and so I want to say, if I remember correctly, because it was probably about 8 or 9 years ago, we were just sitting there having like a coffee with a group of people who he happened to know, and it just puts things in perspective. And to go to your earlier point, how many of us give up after that first try? Like, we give it that one shot and then we go, oh, well, maybe I'm just not cut out for that. And I think somebody had once told me it's your action times your intention that equals your efficacy in life. So if you could have action all day long, like you could write them, and not get anywhere. Mm-hmm. Or you could sit on your couch and manifest, and I am all for The Secret and all of those great ideas. But if you sit there manifesting all day without actually taking the action, you're not going to get anywhere. And so my theory has always been, it's a culmination of the action multiplied by the intention that equals your success.
Absolutely. And you also have to be willing to work at it. I mean, I tell new writers, you have to master your craft. Everybody thinks they have a great idea and they have a great book. Well, a lot of times they're not avid readers. You have to read good books to learn how to write good books. And they don't put the effort in. I mean, early on, I think also one of the keys to my success, I joined Sisters in Crime, which is a mystery writing organization that is intended to advance female writers. And that organization, through a lot of their workshops and their monthly meetings, was very crucial, I think, to my success. I went to writing workshops. I did all those things. I didn't just sit at my computer and write and think that somehow I'm going to be published. I did a lot of work. I did a lot of rewriting. I always tell people the writing is in the rewriting. When I write a book today, I sit down and I write it from beginning to end. I'm not worried about revising or all of that. And when I get that first draft done, I may spend another six months rewriting that book. For writers, the writing is in the rewriting, and be willing to get feedback. I have a core group of focus group readers who will tell me if they think something sucks, and I don't take it personally. I just tell me why. And at this point, with so many books, I know if you tell me where you got bored, I know how to fix it. But it took some time to get there, and you got to be able to tough enough to handle the rejection. You have to be.
Yeah, and I love what you said, too, about taking critical feedback. I was just interviewing somebody today who was in my office, and she was just saying that she got a bad review. And she said, you know, I need to leave this job. I worked what I thought was really hard. And when review time came around, people just didn't appreciate me. They didn't remark on how hard I worked. They didn't remark on the certifications I got. And I leveled with her and I said, can I be really honest with you? And she said, yes, please. And I said, go out, pick up, speaking of books, The Four Agreements, Don Miguel Ruiz. It's one of my favorites. And he talks about not taking anything personally. And it's so true, whether you're an actor, an actress, a writer, a person out there job hunting, a model, there's so many different ways in life. Just somebody out there trying to date. Heck, I'm grateful to have been with my husband 13 years and I don't even know what Tinder is, but I hear that you get rejected a lot. And it's, you have to be willing to not take anything personally. You just might not be somebody's flavor. Or if you get feedback and you know that they like your work or that they like what you're doing, just go, wow, this person is giving me constructive feedback so that I can better myself and make this more marketable to whoever I want to market it to, whether it's a person or a company, et cetera.
And that is so key, the ability to take constructive feedback. Because I was talking to a young writer who was saying that, oh my God, I got this awful review on Amazon. It's one awful review. I mean, I for my book, Anybody's Daughter, I mean, 75% of the reviews are five stars, another 10% are four stars. And there are a couple of one stars. I don't focus on those one stars. With 94% either four or five, I'm going to focus on that. But some people get that one bad review and they want to like just crawl in the bed and never get out again. You know, no book has 100% approval, and, you know, go with your strength.
Yeah, and to your point on that, too, there are trolls out there, unfortunately, and I had never personally experienced it before. When I had written a book that I had self-published called Stop Hoping, Start Hunting, and in the midst of my book tour, I was going to see Conan O'Brien just for kicks and giggles. My mother-in-law wanted to go see it, so I get a couple tickets. I was in the midst of my book tour. One of my colleagues says, Jen, bring a copy of your book. I'm like, Scott, I'm not doing an interview. I'm just going to see Conan in the audience, and he says to me, you never know. Well, I kid you not, Pamela, the craziest thing happened. I'm sitting in the audience of Conan 5 minutes into his opening monologue, 5 minutes and 55 seconds to be precise, because they wound up timing it. And I laughed at a totally inappropriate joke. You know, it's so funny talking about your pen name of Sassy St. Clair. Imagine me, I owned a legal recruiting company, and most of my clients, and you understand this being an attorney, are conservative attorneys, people who run law firms. And he makes a joke, and I can't even believe I'm going to say this on air, about oral sex. And I laughed. And Pamela, the camera panned to me. And I was like, oh my God. I'm like, I am on camera laughing about an oral sex joke. Well, it wound up going viral. So long story short, Conan starts going back and forth with me, and it turns into this whole thing. And I'm like, Conan, you have just ruined my career, buddy. So when he comes up into the audience to hug me, I pull out a copy of the book that I had brought, and I hand it to him. And it turned into this bit that I guess now has about 1 million hits on YouTube. But the thing about,
I love that.
Well, I love it too. But the funniest thing is, I had to deal with trolls. I actually have, if you look at my book reviews online, I had so many people that thought it was a stunt or publicity or it was set up. And I was mortified. Like in the moment, I saw every client I had ever worked with firing me in that second because this had happened. And it wasn't the end of the world. But I still look back, and it does, you know, if you take it personally, it can hurt you to see people writing negative things or calling you negative names. But then it's like, it's not personal. These are just people having their reaction to whatever they think it is, you know?
No, yep, they're definitely out there, which is why I don't post anything political on my Facebook page, because people like that will go after you they'll go to Amazon and go after me because I said something that may disagree, that they may disagree with politically. And it's unfortunate that we're in that time, but we are.
Yeah, and not to knock Reddit, but it was somebody on Reddit who actually got my phone number and left me a negative message. And I'll never forget, a couple months later, I was
in
a
party. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, people go out of the way, and people, I could care less. But here's the funny thing, that people just never know how it can impact somebody. Like, some people might not be like you or I and just kind of water off a duck's back and let it roll, but I felt terrible. I was in a parking lot in Westwood one day, and this man takes a picture of this car. It's like, it's a car that has some political Democratic stickers on it, and it's a Prius, and it's taking up two parking spots. And it had some sort of, like, whatever, it was during the political campaigns. So this guy takes a picture of it, this young guy, and he looks at me because he can see me doing this, and he said, oh, wait till you see this. This will be on the front page of Reddit. This person who's into these politics taking up two parking spots. And I kid you not, Pamela, so I'm standing out there as all this happens, and this little old lady in her walker is barely able to get up to the car. And here was this guy who was about to blast her all over social media. And I'm like, buddy.
Wow.
And you could see, like, the moment of, like, oh, my gosh, I was just about to blast this poor lady because she took up two parking spots. And, you know, but we just never know. Like, you never know. And I know we're diverging for a moment, but it goes back to when people are following their passion, you never want to poo-poo them or put them down, because it's one thing to give a friend or somebody constructive feedback and say, hey, you know, have you thought about doing it this way? But I think so many of us think that we should sit around judging other people's work and say, oh, Pamela, you could never be a writer, or you would never be good at this. And some people might take that personally and not pursue their dreams.
Right. I got some of that. Oh, it's been hard to be an author. I don't know why you're doing that, and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? If it's a passion, you can't not do it. So got past that.
How did you stay motivated, you know, when you had people who said, oh, this is going to be too much work, or what are you thinking, you're off your rocker?
You know, there were some difficult times. And you know what I did? I would go to Barnes & Noble. I would randomly pick up a book, read the first paragraph, and I go, this is not brain surgery. I can do this. And that was one of my techniques when I was really down and out. But I would read books that I thought were just okay. Some of them were not very good. And I was like, no, I'm going to stay with it. And also, there's a great book called Rotten Rejection. And it's about all these famous authors who rejected. I mean, Stephen King, and you can just go on and on. And they actually published some of their rejection letters where people were told them that they sucked. That was a great book to read as well. And they're rich now.
Yeah, it's all about just not giving up. And I think one of the other things you had mentioned that is a great piece of advice for anything you're passionate about that we can all find a little bit of time for, I think you had mentioned just taking that 30 minutes a day, right?
Yep. Going for it. Just going for it. I mean, and find out what works for you. For writers, there's so many rules. Write every day. Do this, do that. Sometimes when I was working at a law firm, there were days when I might not even gotten home, you know, so you couldn't do it every day. But if I had a weekend, I might have been written 10 or 12 hours on a Saturday or a Sunday. So find the time. And so people always tell me, oh, I'm going to wait till my kid grows up, or I'm going to wait till this, that, and the other. If it's 30 minutes a day, use it. When I'm walking, I try to walk for 45 minutes a day. I am oftentimes plotting things in my head. That's where I work out some of my great plots. Or I keep a little notepad in my little fanny pack, and if I need to jot something down, I do. And I'm standing in line at grocery store, and I'm looking at people going, oh, that would make the Bob would be that way that guy looks would be a good Bob in the book I'm working on. And I'll write down something, maybe his mannerisms or something. You can always find time for your passion, is my opinion.
Yeah, I think that it's like many things in life. It's what we focus on. There's something that I talk to people about sometimes. It's kind of like we're all walking in this big, huge warehouse. So imagine life as this big, dark, dark, dark warehouse. And we're walking around with a flashlight attached to our forehead. And whichever direction we're pointing our head is where we're going to go. And so if we point our heads to saying, I don't have time, I'm never going to be a writer, I don't have time to follow my dream, my kids, my husband, my this, my that, then that's exactly what you're going to see in the warehouse, because that's where your head is pointing. But if you point it towards, oh, What if there were a way to have this work? You know, we as human beings have billions of bits of information bombarding us at every single moment of the day, and yet we only pay attention to a couple thousand. So 0.001 bits of information are we actually paying attention to. And the thing that gives us our attention is whatever we're turning our heads towards in that moment, right?
That's right. That's right. It's all about, you know, I just tell people, not making an excuse for it. If you, I mean, and it's funny because we make so much time for other things, you know. We can sit in front of the TV all day, or we can go hang out with our girlfriends, whatever, but trying to, that hour a day to sit down and pursue your passion, we make excuses about it. And a lot of times I think it's a result of fear. Well, I can't do it, or maybe I just try. You know, when I look at that old manuscript I was writing, it is so bad. It's just, I thought I was going to be this great literary writer, and I spent three paragraphs describing how the shadow hits the wall. That's boring. but you didn't, you know, I didn't get plotting. But then when I got it, it was just you move forward. You don't know what you don't know, but you'll never get there if you give up.
That's so true. And so what would you say were some of the turning points for you as you were going along this new path?
One of them, again, was that one day writing course by Michael Levin, was just understanding the plotting. And from there, you know, once I gave the manuscript to a few friends, and they were excited about it. I was so excited because they were excited. Unlike that first manuscript where people ran from me after reading it because they didn't want to tell me that. But just keeping going past rejection, because after a few months of rejection, I sent out more query letters, and I think I'd probably gotten over a dozen rejection letters. And then one day I sent it out, and I got three, within a week's time, I had three agents who were interested in the book. And when I chose one of those agents, and she sold the book in about 3 months. Now, and I thought from then, okay, I'm going to have that beach house after all. The first two books were published, and I thought, okay, I'm on my way now. And then my third book didn't get picked up. Before that, I decided that I wanted to switch agents, because my agents had only sold romance, and I really wanted to be with a mystery publisher. I was with Harlequin for my second book, and Harlequin does romance very well, but I wanted to, even though my first novel had a romance, I mean, had a relationship element, it was about a legal case. In any event, after two books, I got my first, they didn't pick up my third book. And then I got a new agent, which was a big publishing house. I think Sue Grafton was even with that house at some point. And I was like, okay, I'm on my way. Nine publishing houses rejected that third book. And I was like, oh my God. And I got two books out. And so I'm over the hurdle, but I'm back again. And the agent suggested that I put that book aside and I work on something else, but I didn't. I self-published it. And that was the beginning. And I was only going to self-publish to sell enough books to get a book deal. So I published a few more books, still can't get a book deal. But something, I know the exact moment when I decided that I was going to embrace being self-published. I was watching the NAACP Image Awards, and Tyler Perry, a director, actor, producer, was getting the Achievement Award for his body of work. And he said the following words: "We don't have to wait for someone to greenlight our project. We can create our own intersections." And it was, you know, standing in my bedroom, and it was like he was talking to me. I swear the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. And I began to embrace being self-published. And lo and behold, in a couple of years after that, I am standing on an NAACP Image Award stage, getting the best novel award for a self-published book against four other traditionally published authors: Terry McMillan, Walter Mosley, Sister Soldier, and Victoria Christopher Murray, who are all with big publishing houses. And I won that award. So that was a very defining moment for me. And I have still been, I'm decidedly self-published. And it's so interesting because I've had a couple of those publishers who rejected me reach out to me. But at this point, Amazon has like, no, thank you. Amazon has so changed the world. I'm in print, I'm in ebook, and I'm in audiobook. And I've done that all myself. And what the publishing houses are offering people now are just peanuts, unless you're one of their main authors. And so I'm not saying I'll never be with the publishing house again, but it would have to be the right offer. And now, I mean, with 10 books behind me, I know the process and it's easy and I'm happy.
That's amazing. And it's hats off to you, because for me, it wasn't easy. I did, when I published my book, same thing as it, for mine was very timely because it was right when the recession was happening and it was about a how to get back to work sort of a book. And that kicked my butt doing self-publishing. But I can see where once you've done it once and how easy Amazon makes it nowadays, you can have it on e-readers and you can have it in print. And again, everything that I did through self-publishing basically went through Amazon. And it is way more money. I think I remembered hearing, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Pamela, wasn't it The Hunger Games that was self-published and the person who did that, it was a self-published book, perhaps?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with any of that. With the Hunger Games, with their history. But I wouldn't be surprised because there's so many books that were self-published. Like The Shack was a self-published book. And there's so many that just took off. And it was such a gratifying moment to have those publishers reach out to me after all that rejection. It's like, that says I'm doing something right.
Yeah, and it just puts things in perspective of, gosh, you know, sometimes it may take a little bit of extra work up front, but at the end of the day, it's worthwhile because now you know how to feed yourself and you don't have to rely on somebody else because you know how to publish.
Exactly.
You've been there and done it.
Exactly.
And you can write what you want.
And exactly. And times have changed with social media and a good publicist. You know, the money, I'm people are buying ebooks. So it's not like the old days where most books are sold in bookstores. And the bookstores, the independent bookstores are so declining. I'm happy with where I am.
That's awesome. And I know you and I were talking too about an investment seminar that was teaching about goals versus promises. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Yeah. I just finished the Rule One investment seminar and the guy was telling us at the end of the class, you know, to go forth and take this information we've learned and apply it. And he says, and don't set goals. And I was like, I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, what does he mean don't set goals? And he says, you know, how would you feel if the person you were about to marry says to you, my goal is to never cheat on you? And we were all like, oh, but if he said to you, my promise, I will never cheat on you. He said, so make a promise that you're going to apply this information. Don't make goals. And I thought, that was so clever. I'm never going to make another goal again. I'm going to make a promise to myself.
I know, it's just about the semantics, and that's why I loved it. It was funny, I was trying to quote you the other day, because you and I were talking about this before the show about a few days ago, and I was with someone this weekend, I was like, ooh, and Pamela told me this great thing, but I didn't have it in front of me, because it's such a good concept of having these goals. It's more like a somewhere out there external thing that's not you versus I feel like a promise is more ontological. It's more being, it's more ingrained in who you are. Does that make sense?
It really is, yes. And it's why it so resonated with me. And when he used the perfect example, my goal is to never cheat on you. I mean, that's that was just that thing, how it sounds. It just sounds crazy.
Yeah, I know. You could just imagine you're sitting there in a wedding somewhere and the bride and the groom are exchanging vows and he turns and looks lovingly to her and says, my goal is to not cheat on you. I think when the priest or pastor gets to the point of, does anybody reject this pairing, everybody's hands would likely go up. So
for sure.
But it gives you good fodder for your next book. So is there anything that you wish you would have told your younger self about what it was going to be like to follow your dreams, especially in the latter part of your life, and to do this, you know, not when you're 5 or 10, but like 15 or 20, you're just starting off, but in a next chapter of your life?
You know, I guess I would have wanted to focus more on studying my craft, because I'm a journalist, I'm a lawyer, I can write a book, come on. It's just, and I would have spent more time on the craft part, and I finally went back and did it and understood plotting and pacing and all those things. And you know, and I'm never too late person again, because I went to law school at turned 30, my first year of law school. My first book wasn't published until I was 48, and you know, I'm now 60, and I still got another 20 years of writing to do. So I don't think it's ever too late, and just go for it.
That's awesome. So any other tips or anything else that I didn't ask or that you would love our listeners to walk away with from today's show?
to surround yourself with like people. There are so many writing organizations out there, Sisters in Crime, Mystery Writers of America, Science Fiction Writers of America. I mean, there are a ton of them. And even if you can't go to the monthly meetings, they have great website information. So if it's something you want to do, and whether if it's not writing, if it's another group, that there are groups that are intended to help you advance in what you want to do. So find like people and to motivate you. And if you have naysayers in your life, stay away from them.
Good advice. And so where can people find your books? If people want to download, read your books, get more information about you, where would they find it?
They're on Amazon, of course. And if a local bookstore doesn't have it, they can always order it. And you can also read an excerpt of them at my website, which is www.PamelaSamuelsYoung.com.
Well, thank you so much, Pamela. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today. I think it's always so inspirational to have people on the show just talking about their passion and how they got there. And who knows, there might be one person who tunes into today's show who might now have access to realizing, you know what, Pamela did it and I can do it too, and go out there and follow their dreams, because that's what life is about. I think there was a great quote, and of course, now we'll see if I can remember it off the cuff, by Howard or Harold Thurman, that said, don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and then go and do that. Because what this world needs is people who have come alive. And I feel like that's what you did with your career.
Absolutely. And I love it. I get up every morning when I'm ready to write. I'm great. So whatever it is out there that you want to do, go for it.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And I invite everybody listening to tune in next week, Monday at 4 p.m., as we talk to Amy Gross-Linebeck, mompreneur. So it's a new concept out there of the mompreneurs out there, the mothers who are being entrepreneurs at the same time while providing for their families. And so Amy is going to talk to us about her mompreneur, try saying that five times fast, career. And of course, if you missed any portion of today's show, you can always find it immediately after the show on the LA Talk Radio archive section of the Get Yourself the Job page, or later in the week, the show is available for download on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. We always invite you to subscribe, leave us any comments or feedback that you might have. And thank you, as always, for tuning in and for supporting us. And thank you, Pamela, for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right. Wishing everybody a wonderful week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.